right, here it comes. It's Sean Curley, Sherry Elliger Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We certainly do appreciate it. Don't forget, we love, love, love to hear from you. Sherry, you've been in radio for, gosh, a long time. Are you, how would you describe the listeners of the show?
Unbelievably smart.
Yes. And you're not just saying
that.
Very
smart.
You're not just being obsequious. Andrew, stop the music, please. Your word is obsequious.
O-B.
Send us a letter. It's that time of day where we read out your letters, where you tell us, hey, how you...
Hear the rest of the song, or hear the rest of Andrew's struggle to spell the word obsequious. Sickeningly respectful. Jerry.
Wrong!
Love us or hate us, we're somewhere in between.
Write to us.
Sherry is funny. Lord John is...
All right, never enough of that. All right, you write to us at mynorthwest.com. You text as well at 98973. Okay, so we have heard... Are we going to do the... Which one are you going to do first? Which one are you going to do first, Sherry? What story? Your choice.
You want to talk about the drive-by shooting?
Yeah, how about that one? So this fits in perfectly with the story that came out, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago. There is a House bill that is bumping around in Olympia that would basically say that if you're under the age of a certain, I guess, under 18 or something like that, and you are involved in a drive-by shooting in which you shoot and kill somebody, they're not going to automatically have you spend a tremendous amount of time, maybe the rest of your life, in jail. They want to do something if you're under a certain age and not have you tried and not have you charged with. There's like three pieces to it. The second piece would occur. Third piece ends up having you go away for a very, very long time. So the idea is that get these guys before they're a certain age. Don't send them off automatically into the giant prison system where you just make better prison. You just make better criminals out of them. Stop and get. And catch them before and try to have a better type of recidivism rate and stop them from becoming better criminals at an early age. So this fits perfectly.
True.
This is like if they wanted to create a situation as an example, it happened last night, right?
Yeah, and just to be clear on this, John, it's actually, I don't think there's an age limit on it. It's the classification of what's called aggravated murder. Okay, so a drive-by shooting is classified as an aggravated first-degree murder if you kill somebody in a drive-by shooting. Mm-hmm. What they're trying to do is eliminate the aggravated murder part of that because that carries a mandatory life sentence. And they're saying that this disproportionately targets young black men in gangs. So there's a lot of very young men that are involved in these drive-by.
Who actually perpetrates most of those crimes? Drive-by shootings.
Well, I mean, I think that their point is, according to Tara Simmons, who is the one of the authors of the bill, she says murder is murder, but locking up young people and throwing away the key is not the answer. So it's examples of young people like what happened last night with this mm-hmm. young guy who was 14 years old and he shot somebody. They went and they were able to find the car that he, you know, the van that he was in or the SUV that he was in. Mm-hmm. And that kid is now arrested. He's 14. Yeah. And should he be convicted, he would go away if he was tried as an adult for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. This bill is trying to say, let's give people a second chance because a lot of these drive-by shootings are committed by these young people and they have no chance whatsoever at redemption or at a life after they've killed somebody.
Right. And in this case, the 14-year-old did apparently shoot and kill somebody. This is fatal, right? Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It was outside of a Renton convenience store. It was about 5:40, and they saw a 54-year-old man when the police got there. He was lying on the sidewalk. He had multiple gunshot wounds. He was pronounced dead. And then they were able to identify the suspect, who had been in a black SUV, and the suspect was a 14-year-old boy.
Right. Okay. So he won't be tried as an adult and as a minor. Listen, they have all sorts of science now that, especially for young men, your brains are not connected to the proper parts of the brain until you hit about the age of 25. So when you pull that trigger, you know, you don't have a lot of thought about what the future is. You're not really competent as an individual understanding all the ramifications of discharging the weapon into another human being. So I guess that's why you try that. We put that line in there at 18 or above or something like that. I understand this. I used to do some stuff, some work with a group of kids through a religious organization. They were all former gang members. I remember talking to them. A couple of them had been involved in some drive-by shootings and stuff. And I remember when I asked them, how many of you guys have been shot? They all raised their hand. There was like 16 of us sitting in this circle. They all raised their hand and lifted up their shirts and showed me where the bullet holes were and stuff. And they're all young when it happened. I mean, you don't know. You do really, really stupid things. And when you have a gun, you can do a really, really stupid thing that ends somebody's life, as last night in Renton. So here's an example of a 14-year-old. If it's true, if it is this kid, then he ends up going. He will not most likely be tried as an adult. In the case, in the bill that's going forward, is that you would not immediately take a drive-by shooter and send that person away for life. Right? That's it?
They would, yes, they would drop the aggravated murder association with it. So therefore, they would have an opportunity to have, you know, at least parole. At least they would be able to get out at some point. And it would be, you know, an opportunity maybe for them to have a life.
Yeah. Listen, I understand that. The one thing I do disagree with is, oh, it's because it specifically targets young black men. Well, who commits most drive-by shootings?
Well, I guess the answer to that is that the situations that some underserved or underprivileged young people are in creates atmospheres where they do join gangs because that's a substitute for their family. That's not an excuse for what they're doing. That doesn't excuse anybody for murdering somebody. But there's so many things that go into that scenario. There are so many things that go into the type of mindset that when someone is that young and impressionable, like you said, and being involved in those kinds of criminal activities, because that's the life they're living. I mean, it's not an excuse for anybody killing somebody else, because fundamentally, I don't care where you come from or what you have been brought up to believe, everybody does know the difference between right and wrong on that high of a level. You know it's wrong to kill somebody. So it is a very, very complicated issue.
Mm-hmm. We'll let that one stand as it is. We'll talk about the mayor has decided. He was on with G and Ursula, and he talked about his plan to create a separate unarmed police force.
So first of all, my goal is around 1,400 officers. Now, and I don't back away from that. Now, having said that, I also want to create a third department, which is an unarmed unit that will be masters at de-escalation, and they will come from the community members themselves. They'll be culturally competent. Many people want to protect their own communities. I want to give them the tools to be able to do that. So that'd be a certified program where they actually get trained. This is not a park ranger or a community service officer. This is a step below an armed officer. So as we put that in the making, I will go to high schools and I'll go to colleges and we will recruit. But they have to believe that we're trying to establish community trust. And the officers themselves, they have to help me. And so I'm meeting with officers as we speak, telling them, look, do you see the same Seattle that I see? Do you see one Seattle where police officers are welcome in high schools? You know, when I went to Garfield High School, my football coach was a police officer. They were welcomed in our school. Now they are not welcome. So I have to change that whole narrative. So we're going to do that work. And I think that's what my candidacy was all about.
Hmm. So I looked up to see if any cities have this type of thing. So Eugene, Oregon has been doing this. That's a city of about 170,000 people. And about 30 years ago, they set this thing up. It was a group of people. They're unarmed. They're not police officers necessarily. They're sort of one step below. They don't come in necessarily with guns. And apparently they're in there to do that type of work. It's not exactly a social worker, but it's kind of like a social worker. But the whole idea is that does it work? If you were to do this sort of thing in Eugene, Oregon, a successful crisis response program has reduced the footprint of law enforcement and maybe the likelihood of police. So they've been doing this for a while. I saw this article in The Atlantic, and Eugene set this program up. So what does it cost and does it work? That's the question. And ultimately, are the streets safer? as a result of having somebody on the street with a gun or without a gun, and would it work in Seattle? So we are way, way low on how many cops we need. I think we're down to 900 and some. I think we need 1,500. So you have to attract enough police, but then you have to try to get these other people that would step in there and de-escalate situations.
It's a great idea. But there's 945 deployed officers right now. There should be 1,500. But these things take a really long time to develop and implement, a really long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, you know, would they have the same training as a police officer? Would they have the same status as a police officer? Would they wear a uniform? I mean, how would it look? And I guess, you know, it does. What's the incentive to be that and not just be a cop?
I don't know. I mean, can you imagine not having any weapon and going and talking to somebody? You know, they say they're in mental health crisis is the term that they're supposed to use now. You're going to talk to somebody who is out of their mind on drugs or just, you know, most likely out of their mind on a whole bunch of different things. And you don't have any weapon and you're supposed to de-escalate this situation.
Right. So why is that a cop? I mean, it's not. It's somebody that's sort of it's more of a social worker or a civilian.
Yeah. Do you want to be that person?
I mean, of your many jobs. Right. Would that be one that I would choose?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be fulfilling if you could save somebody's life and if you could help somebody that was in the middle of a life-threatening situation and you could de-escalate it or you could soothe someone or help someone. Absolutely. But I'm just not entirely sure what he's talking about as far as how that would be rolled out and why someone would want to. I mean, do you not go through police training, but you wear a uniform? But people are, I mean, do you get all of the associations with being a cop, you know, and all of the vitriol that cops get, but you don't have any other protection?
I would assume, I mean, I'm just going to wild guess here. Then if you grow up in a neighborhood where the police come around a lot and you are told by a hero like LeBron James or from the president of the United States that cops are systemically racist and that the system is racist. And if you step out of your car, you could easily be killed. LeBron James talking about police officers. So you have a natural sort of aversion to a cop standing there with all of his stuff or her with all of her stuff on, and she's got her hands up like at her collar, and she's got that, you know, position they're standing in, or they got their hands open in front of you, and they're going through all the training that they all went through, and you probably just have a natural, you're defensive to begin with, right? And
sure.
So maybe if the person doesn't show up with all of that stuff on, and you start to establish that that person's not wearing the same gear, and maybe you're more likely to have that person talk. I don't know. I can't imagine what it must be like to be in a neighborhood where the cops are constantly there, and you have seen and heard from people how horrible police officers are, and you read books in school when you're in second grade that police kill indiscriminately black kids, and you are brainwashed into thinking that they're all racist. You would naturally probably want to run from them or fight them, and you end up with this. So maybe a different group of people come in there. Maybe you put them in different uniforms. Maybe you don't give them a gun. Maybe it works. Ultimately, the mayor has got a big problem on his hands. They know where all the crime is occurring, where people do not feel safe. But one thing is true. When you ask people who live in communities where crime is always present, do you want more police or less? They say more.
Right. And they want the kind of police that can enforce the laws.
Mm-hmm.
They want the kind of police that can come in and actually protect them, I think.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine living in a world where you're being told always that how awful the police are?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I lived in Baltimore, that was, you know, the police were public enemy number one after the Freddie Gray incident, which is where, you know, I don't remember if you remember this, but Freddie Gray was, you know, a young black man who was given what they call a rough ride, and he died on the way to the police station. And the rumor, or what they were charged with, what these police officers were charged with, later acquitted, was that they, you know, didn't strap him in, and he became disabled and then, you know, died.
Right.
And so there were riots over it. And the police, you know, nobody trusted the police. And then what came out were the horrible injustices and the horrible things that the police had done to people in these communities.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really, really hard to undo that, and it's really hard to go back through and then try to regain trust. It's like any kind of, it's a human condition, right? If you lose
right.
trust in somebody, it's really hard to gain it back, no matter what the situation is, much less life or death.
True.
Because of the following special program, California Fever will not be presented this evening.
Oh, boy, that's a shame. Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. You can depend on them. You can't depend on California Fever, which will not be seen tonight. 1-888-778-KIEL. I woke up the other night. I couldn't sleep, and I found all of those, and I sent them all to Jacob. I'm sure he's thinking, what the hell? all these preemption notices and from CBS. By the way, I just heard from Nicole Dory Monson's producer. She just sent me. She said, you know, it's really interesting that when the kids in September said they were all going to not go into school and they were going to march around and stuff because they didn't want to wear masks, the media was silent and nobody covered it. Now that these kids don't feel safe in school, the media is all over it. Just sort of, that's from Nicole pointing that out. We missed that because we were so busy celebrating you being right with some cockamamie idea. Congratulations on that. I didn't mean to make fun, but good for you. It looks like everybody's picking up on the idea that parents will now become substitute teachers. If you'd like more information on it, if you'd like to be a substitute teacher, Jacob will put it up on the Facebook page. You can sign up. And then if you do go in and you survive, we would love to be able to talk to you about your experience.
Right. Well, that one woman said that her kid coached her on how to be a cool substitute. I'd love to know what the tips were.
Yeah. Being a substitute teacher would be very similar to like going into war, like a revolutionary war, and saying, we need somebody to carry the snare drum. Do I get a gun with the drum? No, just the gun, just the drum. You're out in front with the guy with the penny flute. You're leading the way. There's going to be the first person to be shot would be the guy with the drum and the penny flute.
Well, yeah, if he didn't have a gun, sure.
Yeah, but that's, you know, somebody had to do that. Get everybody marching. That's very similar to being a substitute teacher, being out there in the front. Man, that would be tough, tough way to go. I could think of only one thing worse than that, and that would have to be somebody that works for Kamala Harris. Here she is, NBC, being interviewed about 2024. What are your thoughts about 2024, Madam Vice President?
Are we going to see the same Democratic ticket in 2024?
I'm sorry, we are thinking about today. I mean, honestly, that I know why you're asking the question, because this is the part of the punditry and the
right.
the gossip around places like Washington, D.C. Let me just tell you something. We're focused on the things in front of us.
You're at least...
We're focused on the things in front of us. Let's see what those things are.
I'm familiar with some of the punditry. I don't know if you've heard that there's been some talk about a Biden-Cheney ticket perhaps in 2024. Did you read that article?
No, I did not. And I really could care less about the high-class gossip on these issues.
Okay. She doesn't do well in these interviews. I don't. Mm-hmm. You and I talked about this the other day. I don't know why they keep sending her out there. She is the greatest deterrent. Much like Dan Quayle was often described as the greatest bodyguard to the president, because everybody kept thinking, well, there's no way you're going to take a shot at Bush, because you get then what do you end up? We end up with Quayle. So in this case, it was you have Harris in there. No way will you impeach Joe Biden. No way will you do the 25th Amendment on Joe Biden, because then you end up with Kamala Harris as the president of the United States. So she really does do a good job of safeguarding Joe Biden's presidency right now, because I can't imagine Kamala Harris as president of the United States. And I don't think many other people could either.
I agree. They have made this big effort, John. You know, she had this mass exodus of her staff, right? Her communications
yeah.
person left, all these different people left. Well, she's got a new head of her comms department, and they've got a little bit of a new strategy. They're putting her out there even more to do longer form interviews. And they've taken away some of these kind of no-win issues that she's been assigned to, you know, like the border and all of these things that, that no one really has an answer to. And they've given her voting rights. She's very central to that issue now. So they think that she would probably be a good spokesperson. The other thing that they're doing is that they had stopped for a while. Remember, she was out there with Biden no matter what he did. She was always next to him. Mm-hmm. Then she wasn't. And then all the rumors started that there was this rift between them. Well, she's back out there. And for instance, when he made his big speech in Georgia this week, she was the one that introduced him. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to like reframe her as someone. And if you notice when she did that interview that you just played with Craig Melvin, she when he asked her about, are you going to be on the ticket or are we going to be the same? She almost had to stifle that nervous laugh. Like they've really kind of tried to tamp down on that as well and tried to give her a bit of an interview makeover.
Yeah. She's a nothing. I mean, if people used to say that Barack Obama is an empty suit, she's an empty pantsuit. I mean, she did a good job of dating Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown then put her in various positions, and I'm talking about like legislative positions, not other positions, and she worked her way up to where she was, and then she barely wins in California against the Republican. I think she wins by like 1 point or a small percentage anyway. And then she ends up getting chosen by Joe Biden. So here she is. She is beyond the Peter principle. And there she sits. So she will go down in history as somebody not taking the position as the president in 2024. She will not be the candidate. There will be others that will be gunning against her. Heck, even Pete Buttigieg is going to be in there. Stacey Abrams will be in there. There's a whole list, and including good old Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, who barely beat Bernie in 08. Hillary Clinton, who couldn't beat Donald Trump in 16. Hillary Clinton, who won in 2000 in New York, but then didn't even do so well the next time around. She, too, is sort of very smart, but people can't stand her because she doesn't connect well to human beings. And they think, well, this is her big chance. She's coming back around again because, hey, look at this. She's younger than Joe Biden.
Right. I mean, it just speaks to the disorganization of the Democratic Party that they're coming back to Clinton. And the speculation is with all of the media that she's doing now, she did that that interview with Willie Geist where she talked about her speech. Remember the speech that she never revealed until she did that weird thing. And then she read the letter to her mother and all of that. And she's dropping these little hints. Bill Clinton said recently that she was the most qualified person to run for office in the White House in his lifetime, including me. So they think that, you know, she might be the party leader after everybody loses in 2022 in the midterms, that she might be the beacon of hope for the Democrats.
I gotta tell you something. You know, they're so wacky, so far to the left, that when I was reading pieces about her the other day, I thought, you know what? She actually seems reasonable now.
I mean, she does.
She was to the left, but now they've moved so far to the left, you like come back over again. Well, you know what? Maybe Hillary Clinton.
Right. And she's as much said that. She said, let's look at who really wins elections here. It's, you know, it's not the people over to the left. And even though she is not terribly relatable in terms of her, she doesn't have a lot of warmth. She's actually a pretty good policy person and she does have a lot of experience. So she might be a front runner. Who knows?
Well, if the media decides to like her and choose her and then do what they did for Joe Biden, which is basically not ask him any questions, allow him to do the entire campaign from his basement. And then when he does come out of the basement and shuffles to an ice cream store, you ask him what flavor he's ordered. If they decide to do the same thing and then block bad information about your son or bad information about your husband, if they pick you and they drive you as they drove Joe Biden into the White House, maybe they could do well. I predict they won't. They're bored with her. The media does bore out. It gets tired of certain people. And as far as they're concerned, she doesn't allow herself to be interviewed. She holds back. She doesn't allow the media anywhere near. They'll find somebody bright and shiny that they'll like, and they'll end up trying to use that person as their candidate, Pete Buttigieg or somebody else, to run against whoever the Republican is. So really, the media has such a gigantic influence, or they think they do, and they certainly do push their candidate. They got Joe in there. And I think they'll be bored with Hillary and they'll want to find somebody new, more relatable. But who am I? I'm just some guy who apparently just does a show with a woman who comes up with cockamamie ideas that people seem to want to follow. All right? That's the name of the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
I like that description.
Sorry, I was busy practicing with my ventriloquist dummy, getting ready to substitute teach. All right.
Oh, what's his name? Dr. Flunkett?
Professor Flunkett.
Okay.
All right. We'll play good cop, bad cop. All right. Let's see. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You come on in through the State Roofing text line at 1-888-973-5476. I'll spare you the song. We'll do that a little later on. Too bad for you. Prince Andrew has got some problems because it looks like they are going to make this guy stand trial. The woman that he is accused of sexually assaulting, I think she was what, like some weird, I mean, she 15 or something like that?
She was 17.
Awful. 17. She now lives in Australia. The case will move forward. And Prince Andrew's big alibi is the fact that when she was when they were talking to her, she says, "Oh, I remember him well because he was sweating, just profusely, just like raining on me, just sweat pouring off of him, dancing and other things as well. And just he was always sweating on me." So it all gets down to Prince Andrew sweating. It's all going to be on that. So now they said to him, "Hey, show us your medical conditions. Show us where it says that you don't sweat anymore." Here's Andrew from a while ago.
One of Epstein's accusers, Virginia Roberts, has made allegations against you. She was very specific about that night. Mm-hmm. She described dancing with you and you profusely sweating and that she went on to have bath, possibly.
There's a slight problem with the sweating.
What's more disgusting, thinking of him sweating or thinking of him dancing?
Give me a minute. Those are tough choices.
Think about it.
Because
I'm a terrible dancer.
Peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, or I didn't sweat at the time. And that was... Oh, actually, yes. I didn't sweat at the time because I... had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at, and I simply—it was almost impossible for me to sweat.
Wow! So you get shot at in the Falklands War, and then it causes you have an inability to sweat. So that this is this entire alibi rests on that. I would say, you know, I would like to stand up and dance for you now. Here's something from ABBA. And I will show you that I'm unable to dance. I would go with I can't dance rather than I can't sweat.
I'm Prince Andrew, and I don't sweat. I never have, because I'm a royal, and because I use Andrew Extra Dry. Whether I'm being interviewed about Jeffrey Epstein by the BBC or by Scotland Yard, it's the only deodorant I trust to keep me dry. I may glow or perspire, but I never sweat. Why would I sweat? I've never actually worked.
Let me ask you something. You ever gone on a dance floor with a guy that can't dance? Do you put him out of his misery by, like, kicking him in the knee? Or just do you act like you've pulled a hammy, Sherry?
No.
Tracy,
no,
or just let the guy just keep convulsing on the floor?
You can also just kind of grab their hands and then do, like, a two-dance type of thing. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. No, I just play along with it. I just go along with it.
Tracy just does the same dance he's doing.
Yeah, it's exactly what I do. And I'm not kidding. I have video proof of it. You should watch my wedding video.
Do people, you know, think you're having a seizure and keep trying to jam a wallet in between your teeth?
Well, I don't think so, but, you know.
All right, well,
like,
we want the video, Jacob. Get the video of Tracy's wedding. We want to see her dancing with someone that is a poor dancer. And then put the blur over Tracy's face, not the guy's.
Yeah, because you wouldn't know who I was at all in that video.
Did you get the video of the person sliding your girdle off?
Oh, my God.
Not again.
Here we go with that one.